December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
History, through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Loeffler.
December 7th, 2016, 75 years now since that infamous attack on Oahu. 46,000 Americans in uniform were there on the island that day. Now it's estimated that fewer than 2,000 Pearl Harbor survivors remain. Many of them are there in Hawaii today for the 75th anniversary. And over the next hour, you're going to hear some of their stories. I am Paul Loeffler, and this is a special 75th anniversary Pearl Harbor edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are heroes in your midst, seemingly ordinary Americans who have endured extraordinary circumstances. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along that journey, we learn so much. We're educated, we're entertained, we're inspired by these members of our greatest generation. They will never forget December 7th, 1941, and we shouldn't either. The veterans you'll hear from today were there 75 years ago. Hawaii was not yet a state. Most people on the mainland had never heard of Pearl Harbor and had no idea where it was. The internet was a half century away. Television was almost non-existent. So the way most Americans learned of the attack was through the medium you're employing right now, radio, like this report from NBC.
Honolulu, Japanese bombs killed at least 5 persons and injured many others, 3 seriously, in a surprise morning aerial attack today on Honolulu. The sky was filled with puffs of smoke from exploding shells fired by American Army and Navy anti-aircraft units. Whether surface vessels of the United States fleet were in action against the enemy could not be learned at once. But columns of water rising from the sea as shells hit the water indicated a naval action. Viewed from the hills back of Honolulu, where many city folk went to view the fight, columns of heavy black smoke went skyward from Pearl Harbor. Another bulletin, the Secretary of War has just announced that all military personnel on active duty is to appear Monday in uniform.
So that was what Americans heard from NBC, those limited details not really even coming close to capturing the magnitude of the horror and devastation on Oahu. Across the Atlantic, where war had already been raging for a couple years, here is what the British heard from the BBC.
Japan's long-threatened aggression in the Far East began tonight with air attacks on United States naval bases in the Pacific. Fresh reports are coming in every minute. The latest facts of the situation are these. Messages from Tokyo say that Japan has announced a formal declaration of war against both the United States and Britain. The Japanese air raids were made on the Hawaiian Islands and the Philippines. Observers' reports say that an American battleship has been hit and that a number of the Japanese bombers have been shot down. A naval action is in progress off Honolulu, and American transport with timber on board has been torpedoed in the Pacific, and another cargo ship is reported in distress. President Roosevelt has told the Army and Navy to act on their secret orders, has called a meeting of ministers, and is preparing a report for Congress. In London, Mr. Wynant has seen Mr. Churchill, and both Houses of Parliament have been summoned for tomorrow afternoon to hear a statement on the situation.
So as the hours went on, more details started to emerge, and it would be the next day that Americans were glued to their radios everywhere for what would become one of the most legendary speeches of all time.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. Indeed, 1 hour after Japanese air squadrons had commenced bombing in the American island of Oahu. The Japanese ambassador to the United States and his colleague delivered to our Secretary of State a formal reply to a recent American message. And while this reply stated that it seemed useless to continue the existing diplomatic negotiations, it contained no threat or hint of war or of armed attack. It will be recorded that the distance of Hawaii from Japan makes it obvious that the attack was deliberately planned many days or even weeks ago. During the intervening time, the Japanese government has deliberately sought to deceive the United States by false statements and expressions of hope for continued peace. The attack yesterday on the Hawaiian Islands has caused severe damage to American naval and military forces. I regret to tell you that very many American lives have been lost. In addition, American ships have been reported torpedoed on the high seas between San Francisco and Honolulu. Yesterday, the Japanese government also launched an attack against Malaya. Last night, Japanese forces attacked Hong Kong. Last night, Japanese forces attacked Guam. Last night, Japanese forces attacked the Philippine Islands. Last night, the Japanese attacked Wake Island. And this morning, the Japanese attacked Midway Island. Japan has therefore undertaken a surprise offensive extending throughout the Pacific area. The facts of yesterday and today speak for themselves. The people of the United States have already formed their opinions and well understand the implications to the very life and safety of our nation. As Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, I have directed that all measures be taken for our defense. But always will our whole nation remember the character of the onslaught against us. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory. Interpret the will of the Congress and of the people when I assert that we will not only defend ourselves to the uttermost, but will make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never again endanger us. Hostilities exist. There is no blinking at the fact that our people, our territory, and our interests are in grave danger. With confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph. So help us God. I ask that the Congress declare that since the unprovoked and dastardly attack by Japan on Sunday, December 7th, 1941, a state of war has existed between the United States and the Japanese Empire.
So that is exactly how they heard it on the radio on December 8th, 1941. And not to be lost in our focus on Pearl Harbor today are the other spots that were simultaneously attacked. Over the years on this program, we've heard from men who were captured on Wake Island, on Guam, as the president mentioned, and those who were attacked in the Philippines at that time, who later endured the horrors of the Bataan Death March. I have all those interviews linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com, where you'll also find a photo of two men who are back on Oahu right now for the 75th anniversary. Delton Wally Walling and Chester Ski Bernacki now live less than an hour away from each other in California's gold country. In the photo I'm talking about, taken just yesterday in the observation tower that still overlooks Pearl Harbor just as it did 75 years ago, those two survivors are posing with the reporter who just introduced them to each other this past year. One of them was in that tower on that Sunday morning in 1941. The other was in a ship just below. And as it turns out, some of the bullets that his ship fired toward Japanese warplanes almost hit his now newfound friend. We're going to hear some of their memories of that date, which has certainly lived in infamy, when this 75th anniversary Pearl Harbor edition of Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. If you'd like to sell your low-mileage, well-maintained RV in excellent condition, bring it to Paul Everett's RV Country and they'll sell it for you. That's right. Consignments are welcome. Any type of motorhome, travel trailer, or fifth wheel. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's within driving distance of this radio station. Helping RVers get the most out of their RVs is another one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Paul Everett's RV Country in Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. For the exact locations, go to the website. That address is rvcountry.com. That's rvcountry.com. Over 55 years of experience and 1 million RVers served. Paul Everett's RV Country, proud supporters of Hometown Heroes.
With confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph, so help us God.
Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to this special edition of Hometown Heroes, the hashtag Pearl Harbor 75 edition, I suppose, if you decide to share it with your friends on social media. We started out by listening to what people all over the country heard over their radios 3/4 of a century ago. On this December 7th, 2016, hundreds of Pearl Harbor survivors have returned to Oahu to honor the 2,400 Americans who died that day and make sure that they are never, ever forgotten. One man who's there every December 7th is Delton Wally Walling. A boxing injury had left the middle finger on his right hand pretty severely mangled, and that got the attention of the doctor performing the physical when Wally hitchhiked 180 miles from his hometown of Belding, Michigan, to Detroit to try to enlist in the Navy.
He walks over and he grabs a hold of my hand, and he takes that finger and tries to bend it, and he put me right down on the deck.
It hurt that much.
That hurt bad. He said, you're 4F, go home. Mm. And I told him, wait a minute. I can lick the whole bunch of you guys at one time with my arm behind my back. What do I have to do to get in this great Navy? And he says, cut it off.
Cut it off.
I said, your expense or mine? He says, yours.
What were you thinking? Just like that, cut it off. You really didn't care.
I didn't care. I had to get in the Navy.
Wow.
So
he says, you have to cut it off and you have to pay for it.
And I have to pay for it. So I had to make out a form because I don't want to cut this thing off and I can't get in the Navy. So he made it out. And I went down on the streets of Detroit and finally found a shingle up there that said surgeon. And I went in, and that old doctor was older than I am now.
And you're 95.
And I am 95. And he looked at me and he said, you're nuts. And I said, I know that, but I got to get in the Navy. So after a little haggling, finally he said, I'll cut it off. And I said, no, wait a minute. I only got $20, and I got 180 miles to hitchhike home. Can you leave me enough for a sandwich? He thought a minute, and he said, well, maybe. He cut it off and left me $3. So I'm in the Navy.
And he would be assigned to the USS Pennsylvania, a battleship in dry dock at Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941. As part of Admiral Kimmel's staff, Wally pulled regular shifts on the observation tower overlooking the harbor. He wasn't scheduled for duty that day, but something made him want to stop in there when he was out for an early morning run.
Because I was a boxer and staying in shape, I was out on my run. And then I remembered that I had a friend that was being transferred from the gang. He owed me some money, quite a bit.
Uh-oh.
So at 6:30, I arrived at the tower and thought I'd go up and talk to him and see if I could get some money.
And explain to us what this tower is and what it was used for.
The communication tower at Pearl Harbor that I was on was a water tank with a signal platform on the top, right out in the open, mm-hmm. right in all the weather. Just a little shack set 6 foot square right in the middle. And that tower berthed every ship that ever came into Pearl Harbor for 125 years.
In fact, you were just there this last year for the renovation and the dedication of the rebuilt tower. It's still there.
It's still there.
Yeah.
And I sent it on its next 100 years.
This was not your shift. You're out for a run, but you remember, hey, the guy who is on shift is about to ship out, and if I don't go get my money from him now, I'm never going to get it.
That is correct. Now it's 7:56, and we're standing there, and it's a beautiful day. And all at once, overhead, we've got planes, high planes, low planes, all coming in on us. Oh, must be a big maneuver today. Those orange balls up there is not ringing the bell yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's not ringing the bell, even when we see those black objects dropping out of those planes.
It hasn't hit you yet that this is enemy.
That isn't it. And mm-hmm. when the bomb went off on Fort Allen and all the planes are exploding everywhere, we know we're in war. I'm froze to the rail because the first thing that happened just before the plane started dropping was Hickam Field is blowing up. It's right behind me. I'm looking, maybe a couple minutes or something before the raid started right over Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
So Hickam Field is destroyed immediately. Now I'm froze to that rail because I have joined the greatest Navy of all times. And here it is, being blown up in my face in a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm devastated because if they can do that in 10 minutes, what else is coming?
Right.
And scuttlebutt is everywhere. They've already landed on the other side, and, oh, man, you don't know what to believe.
I'm sure there's all kinds of stuff, and I want to hear about that, but I hope I didn't cut you off in describing what you saw there in the order you saw it. So you saw those explosions on Fort Island.
See, the Arizona never blew up till 8:06. It's the last ship that blew up because your California sunk. Oklahoma's rolled over, the Utah's rolled over,
mm-hmm.
and the West Virginia's got hit by at least 7 torpedoes. It's a mess. It went straight down.
And you're seeing each one of these?
I'm seeing it after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot possibly see it because you're looking there, a bomb went off, one's already gone there. You're looking and seeing after the fact.
Yeah, you can't keep your eye on everything at the same time.
There's no way.
So you're seeing explosion, explosion, fire.
Fire.
And some of the photos that people have seen since. one of the ones that I think turns the most heads is the USS Shaw.
You're exactly right. The Shaw being on dry dock, right, up in the air. Mm-hmm. Now, when it was hit and the magazine blew it apart, now that concussion, because they're in the air, just comes high. So we did feel the concussion from where we were at on the tower from the Shaw.
All those images that we've seen, you're seeing all of this unfold from this bird's eye view on this tower. At what point do you realize that there's something you can do? Because I imagine for most of that, you just felt really helpless.
We can't do anything. Mm-hmm. There's no way of us doing a thing. All the damage is done. All we can do is try to get the men out of the water. And we have nothing up there. I never ever saw a Japanese plane shot down. I saw some smoking, but I could not follow out. Did they crash it or what? But I saw them smoking.
And how close did they fly to your tower?
150 feet.
That's pretty close.
Right there. I'm looking right at them. Uh-huh. When they got the canopy shoved back when they're sinking to California, and they're coming right through about 50 feet right down there, right? You can look right into their plane because they got such a short distance to get over the Helena and get that torpedo in to hit the California. See, that's just a short distance across there. And so they've got to get low in over the buildings there, workshops, and drop their torpedo right beyond Helena to get into the California. So we're looking, but they're looking straight ahead. They're not looking at nothing because they got to concentrate on that little short distance that they got.
And if you guys had had guns where you were, you could have shot them down.
Yeah.
But you're just sitting there observing, watching the show.
Yeah. In my time in the Navy, I never had a gun on my hip, even on the ship.
But they're flying past you. They could have shot your tower. They could have shot you guys.
Had they known that that was the Admiral's communication tower, I wouldn't be sitting here today.
Good thing they didn't know. But you guys did have some rounds come pretty close to your tower from your own ships, right?
Yeah. The Helena right there.
Uh-huh. You were just talking about the Helena. So the Helena's trying to shoot the planes down, and they almost shoot you guys in the tower.
Yeah.
How close do you think those rounds came?
Well, if it wasn't for that stack there, they'd have probably hit the tower.
Mm-hmm.
Same line right up across there. You could hear the bullets going by the tower.
Uh-huh. And I know we're bouncing around, but just here recently, you met a gentleman who lives less than an hour away from you who was on the Helena and was one of those guys firing those shots.
Right.
So what'd you tell him?
Well, they just notified the ship that you might shoot us off if you keep it up.
Uh-huh.
So change your line of fire. But shortly afterwards, they got hit with the torpedoes and was taken away anyway.
Yeah, so much damage. And one of the other jobs that you had there in the tower, as I understand it, was trying to spot bodies in the harbor?
No, every morning.
The next days that followed.
Every morning there'd be bodies come up. And we're the only one that can see the whole water area. Mm-hmm. And so we would notify the barges that are picking up the people. And they would go, they just put a line on them and drag them to the landing, and then it was taken out on the structures and taken away.
So you're up there with binoculars or something, scanning
the harbor?
We got
the big scopes.
Yeah.
We can see everything.
What a morbid job.
Well, somebody had to do it. I mean, it was just something that come along. It was just, you never thought anything about it.
And I guess that's one of my questions, since so few people ever saw what you saw from that vantage point. And you talked about some of the different explosions, but the aftermath. Once all the planes were gone, and you don't know, like you say, if there's a land invasion coming, that rumor's out there. There's all kinds of things, I'm sure, that are going through your mind. But after the Japanese forces are gone and you're looking at what's left, can you describe that scene for us?
When I'm looking at that's left, immediately what goes in through your mind? Are we going to be able to defeat the Japanese? Because now we've seen how strong they are. Mm-hmm. Just a portion of what they got in the Pacific. See, they haven't even got their Asiatic fleet here.
When you're up there in that tower, that morning of December 7th, the planes are gone, the Arizona's still smoldering, the Utah and the Oklahoma are upside down, there's oil throughout the harbor, there's carnage. What was the thing that you saw that still sticks with you when you picture that scene in your mind? What do you see?
That scene of all that oil in the water, the men that was blew off into the water and trying to swim out.
You could see him struggling in the water.
Oh, sure. Just a few hundred yards away. It was a terrible scene. You couldn't hardly watch it.
Do you think that could have been me?
You're damn right. It could have been me.
Do you wonder, are those some of my buddies out there?
Certainly. And there was. Mm. See, 32 was lost off the Pennsylvania.
So your ship's in dry dock, but it got hit, and 32 from the Pennsylvania were killed.
Right.
And you knew some of those guys?
Well, certainly.
How often do you think about that?
You never forget it. You never. You see, after World War II, I was 80% disabled. I was out there 5 years and 2 months without coming home.
5 years and 2 months, never a trip home.
Now, you can carry on with your job and your life, but there is no way that you can't stop the nightmares. What comes on us at night, you can't get rid of. There's no way.
And I know sometimes talking about it makes it even more painful, so I respect that, and I don't expect you to share anything that you don't feel you can. But what are those things that come back to you? What are the nightmares?
The tragedy, the explosions, stuff like that will pop up, see? Mm-hmm.
So 3 weeks, you're up there in that tower trying to find stuff that's
every day,
popping to the surface.
First thing in the morning when it got daylight, then we'd look the harbor over.
So across the country, this had quite an effect. This got people's attention. People were inspired to do something. Guys were signing up all over the place. But what did you see on Oahu in the wake of that attack as far as morale, resolve, determination? Did guys just want to go over and destroy the Japanese? How can you describe that atmosphere?
Well, everybody, after the raid was over, everybody wants to go after the Japanese. We don't know how we're going to do it.
Right.
But everybody wants to get on their back.
Mm-hmm.
And the morale right afterwards is bad because we don't have any equipment. We don't have nothing. How are we going to do it?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know how inspired the people were of the United States to get in and everybody get in the act and get this problem solved and done.
And you mean everybody.
And I mean everybody.
Men, women, and children.
Yep.
And again, you go to Pearl Harbor every year. You've taken photos and signed autographs and shaken the hands of thousands and thousands of people there.
Thousands.
Why do you do that? Why is that important to you?
I want the story told. I want the true story told.
You've decided that when you're no longer here, you want your ashes to be spread on the USS Utah.
Yes.
Why did you decide that?
The Utah is a forgotten ship at Pearl Harbor. It's supposed to be kept up, everything, just like the Arizona. But because it's over on the other side, on Fort Allen, over next to the Aviation Museum, it's neglected. I donate and help take care. So I take money down with me, and I give it to the people that's maintaining, so I know where it's going. That is the reason that I want to be buried there instead of off in the Arizona. It's a place where you can get to it. You can drive right over there to it now. So we take care of a lot of burials there.
So and it's so kind of your way of...
I want to be there with my people that left me many years ago. I can't be buried in the Utah because I was not on the Utah.
Right.
I can be, my ashes are buried in the water.
When you go back there and you take that little boat ride out to the Arizona, does that ever get old? You've done it so many times.
It never gets old. Never gets old. See, I'm on that boat going out there. When that boat stops, they hold everybody aboard. I go first and go in and go and say my prayers for the 1,171 that perished on that day. I know those men are still there.
Yeah. You said that you do what you do to make sure the true story of Pearl Harbor is told. What is the lesson of Pearl Harbor? Why is it important 75 years later to still honor and remember that day?
Vigilance. Vigilance. Today, you're not paying attention. The people down the street, they don't want to get in there. They want to say something. Look what's happening. Everything that's happened in New York, they could have been stopped if they'd have said something to somebody.
Like so many of the guys I talk to, you don't like that word hero being thrown around.
No. 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 No way. They're my heroes. because they gave me the freedom that I have enjoyed for the past 75 years. I have buried so many. They are my heroes, and they deserve everything that they can possibly get.
Those 2,400 Americans who died December 7th, 1941, and 406,000 total in World War II are certainly being remembered today. And we're not done. When we come back, we'll hear the story of another survivor who is back at Pearl Harbor right now for the 75th anniversary. We'll be right back after this. Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say, I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank, it's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly a quarter million EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 800 veterans have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328.
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors. And presented everywhere on the air and online by Paul Everett's RV Country. With 8 locations in 5 western states.
Let's remember Pearl Harbor as we go to meet the foe. Let's remember Pearl Harbor as we did the Alamo. We will always remember how they died for liberty. Let's remember Pearl Harbor and go on to victory.
That was the Sammy Kay Orchestra during World War II. It would have been hard to find an American then who hadn't heard that song, but I'm guessing you might be hearing it for the first time today as our nation draws its attention to the 75th anniversary of a Sunday morning that changed the world. One of the photos you'll find at hometownheroesradio.com is of two Pearl Harbor survivors and the reporter who introduced them to each other. They're all together on Oahu for this national observance. Chase Anderson brought them together after documenting both of their stories for Friends and Neighbors magazine. You've already heard from 95-year-old Wally Walling, who goes back to Pearl Harbor every December 7th, but today is the first time that his newfound friend, Chester Ski Bernacki, has been there since the USS Arizona Memorial was built. Ski was on the crew of the cruiser USS Helena 75 years ago, and he had no idea that war was coming to the Hawaiian Islands.
Oh, no, not at the beginning. Everything was fine and dandy. You used to go down to Fort DeRussy, play handball, go to Nanakuli Beach, and then an auditorium out there by Diamond Head, swimming in that big Olympic-sized, bigger than, I guess, an Olympic-sized swimming pool.
You swam in there, in that auditorium?
Yeah, a lot of times. I'd go on the beach, and being a seaman, you always had to get back by 12 o'clock. They used to call it Cinderella Liberties. And you couldn't stay on the beach overnight, you know. I was living it up. Yeah, I was assigned a 5-inch 38 battery.
Yeah.
And I was a shellman. And so we practiced. It's semi-fixed ammunition. I was a shellman. And the shells weighed 60 pounds each. And there was a powderman and a trainer, pointer, and a captain. And we had a lot of training every day.
Explain to us what that means as a shellman. What did you have to do?
Well, what I did is I waited for the powderman to put the casing in the gun, and then I took the projectile out of the fuse box, the hoist.
Uh-huh.
Which came up from the upper handling room.
So you've got guys a level below you who are sending these shells up.
Yeah.
You grab it
and
put it in.
Yeah.
And then they fire it.
December 7th, 1941. What do you remember about that day?
If I can start out this way, the night before, I went ashore with a couple of buddies of mine. We got back at 12 o'clock. I told you about that Cinderella Liberty. And this one buddy, real good buddy of mine, Charlie Cioffi, had the duty that day, so he was on the quarter deck. I had the duty from 8 to 12. And I woke up in the morning. I did my thing, and then I had breakfast, and I decided I'd go ashore. So I went down to the Foot Locker, and I broke out my shoes and put another buffing on them, and I was sitting there, and I, like I say, I got an uncomfortable feeling. And I said, I think I'll go topside and have a smoke. So as I started up the ladder, the general quarters alarm sounded, and it says, all hands manage your battle stations. Not knowing what the heck was going on, I dropped everything, which you were trained to do, and I headed for my mount, my battle station. And just as I got inside the mount, there was a big explosion. And I figured, what the hell's going on here, you know? We manned the mount, and they reported to sky aft, went into director control, and we started firing. From what I understand, I think we were the first ship to get hit. It came over Ford Island toward the 1010 dock that we were tied up at, in place of the Pennsylvania, which should have been there, but the Pennsylvania had moved forward into the dry dock.
Right.
Which was ahead of us.
And when you say there was an explosion, I want to make it clear for people listening, you're not talking about an explosion on another ship. You're talking about an explosion on your ship that you felt.
Oh, yeah. The ship just shook, and I didn't know what was happening. You know, who would think you were going to be in the start of a war?
Right.
You know, but like I say, being that we had so much training that everything fell into place, you did things automatically without even thinking.
And I want to ask about something else you said there, too. You know, you said that you were going to go ashore, and then you got an uneasy feeling. Premonition that something was wrong, or what?
I don't know what it was. I really don't. Honestly, I'm being honest. I said, I think I'll just go up topside and have a cigarette, you know. And as I did, the announcer system from the quarterdeck telling us, man your battle stations. So being trained like we were, everybody headed for what they were supposed to do. And what was bad about it is it happened so fast that we didn't have time to set the damage control all over the ship. So when we got hit, we got hit in the forward fire room, between the forward fire room and the forward engine room. Just put a big gaping hole in the side, and she just settled there at the dock, which wasn't very deep, you know.
You get to that battle station, and you're loading these shells, loading shell after shell after shell, I would imagine. But you can't see anything, right?
No, because we're inside the mount.
So you have no idea what's happening out there.
I had no idea. And then all of a sudden there was I forgot how long we were firing, but then we had a lull. And we were told to go outside, clear the casings off the deck, throw them over on the dock, and cut the awnings down, because we had awnings, frilled awnings, you know, up over the bow and the quarter deck and stuff. We had to get that canvas off the ship so it wouldn't catch fire and stuff and whatnot. I looked over toward Battleship Row, and all you could see was this smoke and the mortar launches and tugs running around picking up survivors and stuff. It was off in the distance,
right?
You know, but you could just see turmoil, black smoke rising. And at the time, if I remember right, when I looked over there, I thought I saw the Oklahoma capsizing. Mm. So then all of a sudden, here we come again, back in the mount, started shooting again.
So you're a 19-year-old kid. You come up to the top of your ship in this paradise that you've been enjoying for a while.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And this is what you see. How mind-blowing was that to look at that?
I don't know how to explain it. What the heck's going on? You know, even right now, I can't imagine how I felt. Even right now, I can remember a lot of stuff that happened, you know. Looking over this way and seeing this happen and that happen. I remember after the attack, more or less, I looked over to my right, and there was a smokestack there that we had a shot a hole through and knocked an airplane down on the other side. And this guy, Wally Wallings, was in that tower, and I think he said something about, what the heck are you guys doing shooting at? Because it's pretty close to that stack, you know.
Yeah.
From what I heard, you know.
And again, you have no idea what you're shooting at, because all you're doing personally is stuffing
I'm
the shells
I'm putting those projectiles in and going as fast as I could.
Maybe this is an obvious question or a dumb question, but that probably has to get pretty exhausting after a while, because those are 60-pound shells that you're picking up and dropping in.
you don't even notice it. When you're doing something that you can do it, baby. I used to be in pretty good shape there. Oh, man, I'll tell you. After the attack and them guys went over to get burned and stuff, you could smell the flesh from at the hospital when the wind changed and blew over the harbor. They moved us into dry dock, and it was a new dry dock they were building at the time. It hadn't even been completed, but we got in there, and they closed the case on and didn't have any facilities, you know, for this and that. And we had to do our stuff outside over the top of a 2x4.
What about when the second wave of planes came in?
All I remember is we just kept shooting. You don't think about what's happening. You're just doing it. You've had so much training, I guess. And then after the battle was over and the whole bit like that, everybody was trigger happy.
And I'm sure you heard and probably wondered, are the Japanese coming here? Is this going to be an invasion? What's going to happen next?
All I know is I knew Charlie saw if he got injured, because when the flare of the torpedo went up through the ventilation system, it come out through the exhaust, which was over the top of the quarterdeck, and I understand he got burned and he ended up in the hospital. That was the last time I saw Charlie.
See, he's one of your good buddies, and you find out he's been burned from head to toe.
Yeah, and like I say, he ended up in the hospital. I never heard about him after that.
Here you are. This has all happened. You know your ship is damaged. You know people have died. And one of your best buddies is burned so bad it burned all the clothes off of him.
Yeah, just give you a shirt, yeah. The guys that did get burned, to start out with, we used to have inspections at the war, full uniform, whites. And then Eleanor Roosevelt come over before Pearl Harbor and had everybody send in 3 sets of whites and cut them down to where they looked like the Bermudas, you know, the shorts. And that was a bad thing, because when the guys got burned and stuff like that, their skin was exposed.
So there are guys that are burned, there are guys that are hit by projectiles, the shrapnel, and as I read in Chase's article, you saw a guy who was hurt pretty severely on one of the gun mounts, right?
What happened is one of the guys, he was in a turret too. And in order to get into turret 2, which was higher than the turret 1, mm-hmm. you had to climb up a ladder to get up inside the turret. Mm-hmm. As he was reaching up into the ladder to climb up, some kind of fragment or something hit that barbette and hit him in the chest and tore his arm off. So they put him on the beach. And then when we had the canvas out there, we took the awnings down, he was inside one of those awnings.
With his whole arm blown off.
Yeah, dead in a doornail.
And you saw that?
Yeah, that's the only time I ever saw anything like that that was real bad, except when I was in Guam and saw all the Japanese dead bodies and stuff and whatnot.
So seeing all of this, is that something that makes you angry? Are you just sad? How would you describe the emotions that stirred up in you?
I don't know how it affected me, honestly. Like I say, I guess I was going into what they call that post-traumatic deal. Because I got to where I just didn't give a rat's butt, you know, about anything. I just did what I thought I was supposed to be doing.
What about the days and weeks that followed the attack? What were you guys doing?
Well, what happened after the attack, and we were able to, they put us in the dry dock. And they patched the hole in the hull. And then we went back to Vallejo.
And eventually that cruiser would be back at sea. Ski experienced some intense battles and witnessed the sinking of several other ships. And then on July 6th, 1943, his cruiser, the Helena, which had survived that torpedo strike at Pearl Harbor, met a challenge she could not survive in the Battle of the Kula Gulf.
The first hit, it took the bow completely off. And I think we were doing 15, 20 knots, something like that. And being inside the mount, I don't see what's going on. You know, all I could do is feel things. Of course, we had a light inside the mount to see what we were doing. When we got hit and the bow got blown off, the ship just started quivering and shuddering from the motion of going forward. And then when we lay dead in the water, we got hit with 2 more. But right in the spot where we had been hit in Pearl Harbor.
Same spot.
Yeah, between the engine room and fire room of midships. All the lights went out. The gun captain says, abandon ship. So we got outside the mount, I did, and I reached for my life jacket, which was outside. You didn't wear your life jacket inside. No life jacket. So I got down, and being coming out of the light into the dark, you could hardly see anything real good, you know. So I got down on my hands and knees, and the teak wood decks were cracking, crackling. And next thing I knew, I was in the water. And I looked up, and I could see a silhouette of the two stacks kind of bending together. And I thought, I better get away from here. I was told, get away from the side of a ship if it's going down, because it might suck you underwater, you know. I swam away from the side of the ship, no life jacket. I looked around, what the heck am I going to do here, you know? Still looking around, and all of a sudden I found a life raft. And I was really tired by then.
I bet.
From swimming. So I put my arms inside of the bales of line outside the life rings. You couldn't get inside because that was reserved for the wounded and stuff. So I hung there for a while, and then all of a sudden, here comes a life jacket, a Mae West. I put that on. Got that on. I tied
it just floated right to you.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was just floating around.
Uh-huh.
And then I found a pneumatic life jacket, which fitted around your waist, and used a CO2 bottle. I tried to put that on to have it inflate, but it was dead, so I just blew it up manually. So I had a life jacket around my gut, a pneumatic life jacket, and then it Mae West. So then that's when I was comfortable being alongside, outside the life raft. And then I looked over and I saw, which I thought was a silhouette. So I said, I wonder what the hell that is. So I swam over that way. I didn't know whether it was Jap or what. But as I got close to it, it was the Radford. So as I got close to it to get aboard, the ship got underway, because the battle was still taking place.
Yeah.
And so it got underway, and here I am, you know, by myself out there in the water again. So I'm swimming around, and here comes the Nicholas. Fortunate enough, I got the head cargo nets over the side. I grabbed the cargo net, got on, and held on for dear life. I climbed up and got up underneath the torpedo tubes.
How long were you in the water?
I keep telling myself 2 hours, but I don't think I was in there that long.
Really somewhere don't. Between one and two.
Yeah. You can't judge time. Oh, here's another thing. After it got sunk, you know, here I am in the water, and the first thing come to my mind is, what the hell is my mother going to say about this? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because in Pearl Harbor, they didn't notify. At first, I was missing, you know, and they notified her back east in Massachusetts.
So she got a telegram saying your son is missing after the attack on Pearl
Harbor. At
first,
yeah, and then... Uh-huh. Found out that I was still around.
You know, maybe this is a dumb question, or maybe you've never considered it before, but had that Mae West not floated by, or the life jacket not floated by, do you think the outcome would have been any different?
Only the guy upstairs knows. It wasn't my time, I guess.
Because you were already pretty exhausted.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. When I swimming without a life jacket, the water wasn't really rough, but it was rough enough to where it took a little effort. And then all this stuff going through your mind, you can't see what the hell happened. You know, where's the ship? A lot of things went through my mind.
You mentioned your eyes burning, too, from getting that oil and stuff.
Yeah, that crude oil is just like almost like tar, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, real heavy, heavy crude.
This is a serious nightmare that you're living in. Do you remember anything that went through your mind during that time?
Goofy things.
Yeah?
Where the hell's my wristwatch?
Well, as I joked with Ski during our interview, maybe God didn't want her to know how long he'd been in the water. Ski had to survive all of that to do what he's doing today, honoring those who didn't come home by attending that special ceremony at Pearl Harbor with so many other survivors. Since most of us alive today were not alive then, I had to ask him what he thinks we should remember about December 7th, 1941.
People have short memories. They're already forgetting 9/11.
Yeah.
They're already forgetting that.
So what is the lesson of Pearl Harbor? What can we take? What should we remember?
Remember Pearl Harbor, what happened and why it happened. You weren't alert.
One of the enduring images of Pearl Harbor, well, there's a few of them, but they involve the Stars and Stripes. You know, that Remember Pearl Harbor poster that went all over the country in the wake of the attack had a tattered flag flying among the smoke. When you look at the flag now, what does it mean to you?
The population of the United States should have more respect for it, for one thing. And everybody should try to get into service and serve the country.
For those of us who haven't had the privilege of serving, we still have the chance to thank and recognize those who have. You'll find links to other episodes with Pearl Harbor survivors at hometownheroesradio.com. And this next weekend, we'll hear from a collection of those voices. Thanks for taking the time to mark this 75th anniversary with Wally, with Ski, and with the rest of us today. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping that you'll remember here on Pearl Harbor Day and every day that freedom is not free. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive. And then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. It gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.